According to the statistics, restaurants are making profit in the single digits and low single digits.
Low single digits, yeah.
You can't sustain a business with the profits of 3%, 4%, and 5%. And we're not talking profits like we mentioned, Amazon, where they're making $100 million. We're talking about restaurants that are making $1 million a year. So if you're making $1 million a year sales, 3% is like $30,000. Your air conditioner breaks, it costs you $40,000.
Mon nom est Antoine Gagné, je vous souhaite la bienvenue au 32e épisode du podcast Hypercroissance, présenté et produit par G7 Media, une agence de publicité Facebook. En gérant près de 1 million de dollars de publicité Facebook par mois, G7 Media aide depuis 8 ans maintenant les entreprises à accélérer leur croissance via l'entremise de la publicité Facebook et Instagram. Si vous êtes un commerçant en ligne et que vous désirez passer de croissance à hypercroissance, rendez-vous au www.g7media.com et demandez à parler avec un de nos conseillers. En l'espace de quelques jours seulement, notre équipe saura vous bâtir un plan de match afin de faire grandir votre entreprise. L'industrie de la restauration a été une des plus touchées suite à la crise reliée au COVID-19. À la mi-mars 2020, la loi a obligé tous les restaurateurs à fermer leur établissement afin de réduire les risques de contagion du virus. 3 mois plus tard, les restaurateurs peuvent maintenant réouvrir leurs portes, mais sont-ils prêts? Est-ce que les 3 derniers mois d'inactivité vont avoir été fatales pour cette industrie déjà très fragile et qui opère sur de toutes petites marges de profit? Mon invité aujourd'hui, Peter Katsoudas, propriétaire du steakhouse numéro 1 à Montréal, le Ribbon Reef, va nous expliquer qu'est-ce que les restaurateurs doivent changer selon lui pour être plus compétitifs dans cette ère post-COVID. En plus de conseils très pertinents, vous allez voir que Peter a une histoire fascinante qu'il nous explique dans un entretien d'environ 1 heure. Sans plus attendre, ma discussion avec Peter Katsoudas. Peter Katsoudas, you are the owner of the number one steakhouse in Montreal, the Ribbon Reef. You bought the place in 1991, and proudly this year, you've been named the 73rd best steakhouse in the world from the famous website worldbeststeakhouse.com. Also, even after 65 years, you continue to grow year after year. Peter Katsoudas, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Antoine. Nice to have you here. Yes, number 73. Yes, it's in the 100, but I would have preferred it. And my goal is to make it from 1 to 10, to be in the top 10.
There's a lot of great restaurants on this list. I look at it as, but it's good. There's not a lot of restaurants in Montreal, even in Canada right now, that are on this list, actually.
No, there isn't. And I consider my restaurant, the Ribbon Reef, Canada's premier steakhouse. For sure, Montreal.
Yeah.
The rest of Canada, like Toronto and Vancouver, have a couple of nice ones, steakhouse. But I would consider myself up there with the top.
Oh, you have amazing food. I love to come here, actually. And, Peter, it's a weird time right now. And, for people who are listening to this podcast today, we are recording this podcast on June 19. So we're still in this COVID situation. And like a lot of restaurants owner, you've been hit because you had to close the place. It was the law. And my goal today with you is to get your point of view on how the restaurant industry will react to this situation, okay? Because I think it will be something, and I would love to have the opinion of one of the pioneer in terms of restaurants in Montreal. But before we talk about this topic, Peter, for people who are listening, can you give us a summary of your entrepreneurial career? When you bought the Rib, what did you do before? So people can understand a little bit who you are, what you achieved during these years.
Thank you very much. I was born in Greece, and we migrated to Montreal through Halifax, through Pier 21 in Halifax.
Okay.
Back in 1960, and that's one of my goals. And I wanted to do this summer, but I don't know, to go back to Halifax to see Pier 21, where the ship. That was my first cruise. That's why I love cruising.
Okay.
That was my first cruise from the port of Piraea to Halifax, probably because they weren't coming into Montreal. So we landed there, and I was 6 years old with my mother and my 2 sisters younger than I. And I remember they all had a hard time crossing the Atlantic. They got seasick, but I was running around, and, it's the ships it didn't bother me. So we got to Halifax, and then we came by train from Halifax to Montreal. And my first experience was, and I remember it, in the train in Halifax, I was hungry. And we asked for some bread. And they gave me sliced bread. And I turned around to my mother. I said, but this is, and my mother agreed. I said, this bread is not cooked. Because coming from Greece, we weren't used to Western sliced bread. And I said, but the, you know, Greek bread is, it was more tight. It was not what I was used to and harder. This to me was uncooked. And so my mother says, sir, well, can we get some cooked breads? Well, I don't know, the bread's cooked. So they toasted it because I found it. So that was my first experience. And then and then when we got to Montreal and I saw the all the snow and, you know, I wasn't used to all that. And then, you see, you have to remember that I was born in 1953. I'm 67 today. So in 1953 in Greece, in a little village, let's say, like, I won't say Mont Tremblant, but even, you know, Mont Tremblant is high class, but a little village where in 1960 there was no electricity up there. There was no bathroom inside the house. There were outhouses. So I didn't grow. I'm six and a half. I have never seen television. I have never seen internet. I've never seen a computer. I've never seen anything. So I come to Montreal, and my father was here for a couple of years before. He got a job, and he set up a house and furniture. And my first experience seeing the small TVs in the box, you know, with the, where we had channel 6, channel 10, channel 2, and channel 12, four channels, two French and two English. And I look at that. You believe me when I say that I went to the back of the TV and started to take it apart to see where the people were hiding. At that point, you know, because I was, it was like, you know, it was, you know, if it's, I never saw that before. It was like, you know, so that was my, first experience. And then the second experience that we had was, well, we went to private school, in Greek for the first 2 years. So we were learning Greek, English, and French, talking 1960. That was 2 years, but, you know, my father was a farmer in Greece. He came here. He was unskilled, did a couple of years of elementary, and he was a farmer. He came here and he went to a restaurant and they threw him in the kitchen and he was washing dishes, you know, day and night. So he couldn't afford that private school, even though it wasn't expensive. And then we tried to go to a school in the plateau where it was next to our house, was run by nuns, and it was a Catholic school. And they refused us because we were Greek Orthodox. And that was a French school. And my father said, well, what's the problem? Well, he says, look, here in Quebec, if you want to go to Catholic school, which are, they're all Catholic schools, you have to be Catholic. You guys are not Catholic. You are Greek Orthodox. And you have to go to the Protestant system. They take anybody. So that's why in my era, you have very few Greeks that spoke English, I mean, spoke French, because we were all pushed to the English system.
Interesting.
And this law, because at that time it was the Catholic Church was controlling. So if you were Catholic, Catholic schools were Catholic. So we ended up going to the Protestant system, and then from that, high school and all that. And that's the majority of Greeks that came in that era. I don't remember exactly, but I think they changed that law in the late 60s at one point, 69, 70, I don't know when it was, where the irrelevant of what religion, you could go to any school. So that was why we went to the English system. Then I finished elementary, I finished high school, and I started to go to university at what they call today Concordia. At that time, St. George Williams University. I wanted, and my parents wanted, I wanted to become a lawyer.
Really? Then I knew that. Yeah. Okay.
So when I was going to high school, I had a job because of my Greek background. Every restaurant in that time, like I was telling you before, in those years, if we go back 40, 50 years ago, 75% of the restaurants in Montreal were owned by Greek owned. Not, they weren't Greek restaurants, Greek owned. So being that, I would have a job in the restaurant business when I was going to high school for, you know, some spending money. So I started university, and what made me stop is because I started working at 12, 13 years old in the restaurant industry because of my father, uncles. So I always had, even at 12, 13 years old, I got started to have money. So I enjoyed buying jeans, you know, going out and having a good time. So by the age of 16, I got my license. 17, I bought a car. So now here I am at the stage of university. I'm driving to school with a car. I like the girls. I'm spending. So I said, I have to work. So I'm going home. I started in August? By after the first semester, I'm going home. We were living in St. Leonard. That's another thing. You know, for most of the Greeks, they were living in Park X. My father bought a house in St. Leonard. So I grew up down there with the Italians. And as I'm going, I stop by Jean Talon and I walk into this pizzeria just by chance. I saw it on the way and I said, let me go and pick up a pizza. We'll take it home. Surprise my parents and my sister. So as I ordered the pizza and I'm waiting for it to be cooked, the staff were Greek people and we started talking. And they told me that they were in the business for many years and they wanted to sell. So long story short, by the time the pizza was cooked, which takes 12 minutes or 13 minutes, I had negotiated. I had made him an offer verbally and I had bought that pizzeria. I leave, I go home, I tell my father, I said, look, you work in the kitchen. I just bought myself a restaurant and I want you to be with me. He says, what are you talking about? You're going to school. I said, well, I'm going to quit. And I said, I'm going to do some night. I said, but I want you to work in the kitchen and I'm going to take care of it. It's a pizzeria. But he says, what about money? I said, look, they wanted 30,000. I negotiated. I said, 20. We're going to give them 5,000 up front. And the 15,000, it's going to be a balance of sale for the next couple of years. And we're going to be good. But he says, I don't have the 5,000. I said, you don't have that. You don't have 5,000. Anyway, long story short, I raised the $5,000. And
where did you find it?
I found that I borrowed from a couple of uncles. And I had applied for a credit card.
Oh.
And I got a cash advance at that time for $1,000.
So that's how your entrepreneur journey started.
That's right.
Oh my God.
And I said, look, if I'm not going to go to school, I'm not going to work in a restaurant being a cook. So as an adult, I have never worked for anybody. You know, if you eliminate, let's say when I was 12, 13, 14, you know, when I stopped, let's say high school or did a few months of university, I never had a job for a company to work. So I opened my restaurant and I bought it. I had a couple of cars of delivery. Before you know it, I had 4 or 5 cars delivery and I did very well for the 4 years. And then
you had this restaurant for 4 years.
4 years.
Where was it located?
It was on Jean Talon and 15th Avenue.
Okay. Interesting.
In what we call Saint Michel near Saint Leonard. So I was delivering inside and delivering. So that was successful. And then by 1974, I grew out of it. I didn't want to do that anymore. So I sold it for about $50,000.
Okay.
I wanted to now, by this time, I had met
So you doubled the value, right?
I doubled the value and I was having a good time for 4 years.
That's good.
You know, I had bought a couple of Volkswagens for delivering. I had bought a Toyota. Before I knew it, I bought myself a nice white Trans Am with a blue stripe.
Oh,
in the front. So, you know, I was living it up, going out and having a good time. So I sold that and then I bought another one. And the second one, I didn't do so good, but then I got married. Then I bought, and I stayed in the business. Meanwhile, going back to school, I tried to do night courses, but you know, being in the restaurant business, you know, you start at 10 o'clock in the morning, you finish at 12, and finishing at 12 is like you guys finishing at 5. So you go for cocktail hours. Our cocktail hour was 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. Before you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. And at 3 o'clock and at 2 o'clock in the morning, the possibility of getting into trouble increase more than in 5 o'clock.
Of course.
So before you knew it, you know, it would be 3 o'clock, the bars would close. Then we were a little bit hungry. We'd go up and have a little bite. And before you know it, it's 4, 5, 5:30 that I'd be going to sleep and then 10 o'clock. So that was the life of most of my life, growing up. Yes, that cost me 2 divorces in the meanwhile, but you know, And then I from that I sold it. I bought another restaurant in Laval. Then I sold that.
You had three restaurants?
I had five or six, yeah. Then I went to, that didn't do very well, so I got out of there with hardly no money. And I went to the Plateau. And at the Plateau, I bought a restaurant in 1976. That's when Parti Québécois came out. I bought a restaurant, Greek background, speaking English, because my wife at that time was Italian. I bought it from a French Canadian. I did a good deal. And I bought that place for $16,000. And the French Canadian, I bargained with him, and he was an older man. And when I told him, I'm going to give you $16,000, he said, okay, let's go. 16,000 piastres. And then when I said to him, oui, mais j'ai juste 4,000 piastres. He says, but you said, I said, yeah, $16,000, but I'm going to give you $4,000 up front. And the balance of $12,000, I'm going to give you 12 checks of $1,000 each. I says, no, ça marche pas. I said, écoute, mon ami. I said, we're going to go to the notary. And I said, I'm going to give you the $4,000. And the restaurant is going to stay in your name until I pay the last check. So the guy turns around and says, ça va être mon notaire. I said, yeah, ton notaire, no problem. So that's how I got, again, after I lost in the second restaurant, I got back into business at a little restaurant called La Marche at Saint-Hubert-en-Roi.
Okay.
So now I bought it. I started rolling. In about a month and a half, the waitress that was there before says, Peter, he says, we have a little problem. I said, what's the problem? He says, you know, there's a few people, and this particular guy started a rumor. Les mousiens anglais achetaient mon restaurant dans nos coins. And he says they're boycotting the restaurant. I said, first of all, I'm not anglais. I'm a Greek. If you want to say, Mouzi Greek, I stay notified. But I said, je suis Greek, je pas. I said, who said that? So she says, look, I'm going to point him out. So one day he's passing by and he says, it's that guy, an older man. So as soon as I see him, I open the door and I start to chase the guy, not to invite him. So I go up, the guy got scared. I said, monsieur, mon nom c'est Peter, je suis le propriétaire de le restaurant ici. He looks at me, he says, mais tu parles français? Mais je dis, je parle français, je suis ici depuis 6 ans. Oh, il dit, je pensais, non, je dis, je parle anglais parce que ma femme est pas grecque, mais je suis grec, pas anglais. Oh, il dit, dans la deuxième guerre, j'étais en Grèce, c'était bon monde. Anyway, and that was it. From that point on, I had that restaurant for 4.5 years. The restaurant was full from morning to night.
Oh, really?
Because, you know, at that time, you know, they didn't like the Anglais, but they had nothing against the Greeks.
Exactly.
So it was very busy. And just to give you some numbers, I bought that place $16,000, and I sold it 4 years later for close to $100,000. And it had like 25 seats.
Oh, my God. Okay. And I'm curious, Peter, you did a lot of transactions buying,
yes,
selling restaurants. Where are the values coming? So basically, is it profit times 3, profit times 4? Do you buy more the assets and then there's value on different assets? How these transactions happen?
You see, today the transactions are less and they're more bigger. But in those years, there were a lot of immigrants, a lot of Greek people, and they were buying and selling restaurants. So there was a big movement in the restaurants. And the restaurants, you know, like any business, it's 4 times bottom line, 5 times bottom line.
So basically, EBITDA times 3 times 4.
You can't just make money from the sale. You have to be making money from the operations. And this is where the problem is, and we're going to get to that soon. With the closing of COVID, that are a lot of restaurants are in trouble because their profit are razor small. And that's not because of the government, and that's because it's because of the owners.
But yeah, we'll get there. But continue with your story. I think it's fascinating.
From that, there was this time in 1981, Prince Arthur has gotten very busy with bring your own wine. And that was a new thing in Quebec. And the bring your own wine started on Prince Arthur, and it wasn't a planned thing. It was an old friend of mine. He opened up a little restaurant selling brochette and souvlaki, And he applied to get a liquor license. So the city said, you cannot have a liquor license. You have one bathroom. In order to get a liquor license, you have to have two bathrooms. I says, I don't have place. The place was like for 20 people. And then he built a little terrace outside. So since he couldn't get a liquor license, you had customers that like his food and says, Dimos, hey, can I bring my bottle of wine? I said, bring it. I don't care. So that's how the bring your own wine started.
Yeah.
Back in 1977, because the guy couldn't get a liquor license. And then Prince Arthur spread out from restaurants from 20 up to restaurants of 1,000 people, all bring your own wine. And that's when the government later on said, hey, all these bring your own wine restaurants, they have no license. So let's say you need a license to have bring your own wine so they can get another $1,000 for the permit. So that's how the bring your own wine. So after Prince Arthur was quite popular, there was an offspring on Duluth. So people said, let's start Duluth. So restaurants started to be built on Duluth. So at that point, I was around the corner. I said, oh, let me jump into that bandwagon. So I bought a building on Duluth, but there were a lot of buildings being bought. And I sort of went a little bit on the west of Saint-Denis, corner of Laval. I bought a building and I renovated it, borrowed an SBL and a mortgage. And listen to what I'm going to tell you now. You know what we interest today from the young people that know. I borrowed a $100,000 mortgage and $100,000 SBL at 18.75% interest per year, my friend. 18.75%. That was the interest in 1981. And it was recommended by my accountant because
it was a good deal at that time.
Oh yeah. And they told me to take it for 5 years because it was gonna go higher.
Oh my God.
So imagine now $100,000 loan where I had to pay $19,000 interest only and 5 years. Anyway, after 2 years, it went down to 12%. But
it was flexible.
Yeah. But it wasn't. I got stuck with a 5 year. I was paying 5 years, 18.75%. So imagine how hard it was to make money. Anyway, so I opened up. I bought a building. I renovated it to open up an Italian restaurant. But everybody in the street says, what are you opening up an Italian restaurant? All the restaurants are Greek. So they converted me to open a Greek restaurant. So I opened a Greek restaurant, bring your own wine. It was La Terrasse du Lut. Two floors, nice greenhouse. So I opened that restaurant in 1981, a beautiful restaurant, and we started getting busy. But a lot of the big business on Duluth was Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I didn't have a lot of capacity. And I had built my restaurant so beautiful that people would come in with 2-3 bottles of wine and would stay all night. So I didn't have enough capacity in the turnover. So I did that for maybe a year and a half, 2 years. And then finally I said, you know something? I should have gone with my instinct the first time and opened up an Italian restaurant. So overnight I close as a Greek restaurant. I have prepared an Italian menu. And I said, I'm going to convert my restaurant to an Italian restaurant. So I leave the customer. We close one night with Terrasse du Lut. And the next we open up with a restaurant called Bellini's. Italian restaurant. And bring your own wine, but $5 above SAQ. It was a disaster.
Oh, really?
Because the guy who wants to bring his own wine, he doesn't want to pay $5 because he wants to bring his own wine. So I said, you know something? I stopped that. I got a license. And I said, it's Italian restaurant, licence, and you're going to pay 2 times above the price or 2.5, whatever it was. And I was the only restaurant on Duluth called Bellini's, Italian, haute gamme, not pizzeria, haute gamme cuisine, with a license. And I was successful there for 10 years, for 7 years, 10 years, 2 years the Greek, 8 years. 6 years, we did very well. And then it started to go down because, like parking, there were so many restaurants, Zulut that opened up, and so many restaurants, Prince Arthur, so many people coming down. The residents went crazy. They couldn't find parking. So that's when the vignettes came into. And they blocked all the street, and they just left 2 corners for one car on each side of the street to park. So customers would come down, park, eat, $45 ticket. And before you know it, my business was going down. And people were saying, valet. I said, valet, but valet where? I'm going to take your car and bring it back to TMR. You know, but you know, where was I gonna valet? You know, I tried to find, there was a piece of land near my restaurant where I tried to buy it. And when I went to the city and I said, it's across the street, and I said, I'd like to put a parking. I says, no, you can't park cars. But I said, why not? I'm going to close my business. No, and it started back then. So it's not only today. They started back in, 1982, 83. I said, can I open up a terrace? So the city says, but it's across the street from your restaurant. You can't build. I said, I'm not going to build anything. I said, if you've gone to Greece, they take, and I said, and even boulevards, that Duluth is not too many cars. I said, we're going to have the food in a tray and carry it across the street. And he says, you're going to cross the street. I said, well, yeah. Anyway, they didn't let me. And finally, I was known, I was always trying to sort of do something better and different, always thinking out of the box.
But just one thing, Peter, for people who are listening today, you're talking about all your restaurants, but just to be clear, you were not the chef when you were running these restaurants, right? You were more the business person.
I hated cooking. I bought a restaurant to have people cook for me. No, I like the business aspect of it. I love to be around people, and that's maybe because of my Greek background. You know, that's why a lot of the Greeks are in the restaurant business all over the world. And it's the old word, you know, that the Greeks came up with, philoxenia. Philo meaning friend of strangers. Greeks, it's part of our blood. We like to dance, we like to drink, we like to eat, and we like to be and entertain people and be entertained. So that's what it was.
Interesting, because I was saying that because a lot of restaurant owners, most of the time they finish as being the chef and doing most of the thing and working in the business instead of working on the business.
No, I never went to chef school. I learned. I have hired and fired many, many chefs in my life. And to be honest with you, the word chef is a title that people use, but very few deserve it.
Exactly, I guess, right? I guess.
So I know how a chef is supposed to work. And a chef, in my opinion, maybe a lot of chefs will not like what I'm going to say, the chefs cannot operate restaurants. Chefs are there to be chefs, to cook, and they need a guy who is an entrepreneur to be able to run a business. Voila. Because like any other business, either you're selling a steak or you're selling a piece of fish or you're selling time, or you're selling a suit, it's the marketing, it's the how you serve the experience. It's not the chef. If the chef is not, if I have a restaurant and my product is not good, then I fire that chef and get another chef until the product is good. But if you're a chef and you have good food and the front of the house is not operated properly, people go to the restaurant because they like the service. The food, yes, has to be good. But the number one thing to me is the how you feel to walk into the restaurant.
Of course.
How the owner receives you, how the service is. The food has to be good. But even if the food is not 100%, you can excuse it because we're human beings and say, okay, he overcooked the steak a little bit. But you will not forgive bad service.
So let's get there, because you told me that a lot of times in the past, bad service cannot happen. Bad food at some point could happen, but bad service cannot happen. So
shouldn't happen, and should it's not acceptable to customer by a client.
Of course, totally. So this, you told me that about the rib, but now you were on Duluth in 1981, stayed there for roughly 10 years. So I guess it brings you back to roughly the years where you started to look for the rib, or maybe right.
Yeah. So now we're, let's say, back in 88, 89. The business in Duluth was not going very well because of lack of parking. So I started looking elsewhere. So they brought me up here on DeCary at a restaurant at the Ruby Foods, but I didn't like it. And then the guy says to me, I have another restaurant that the guy wants to sell. They've been there for...
So you were working with a broker at that time or what?
It wasn't a broker. It was through a friend. I told them I'm looking for a restaurant. He says, you know, I know somebody who knows a few people that want to sell. So they brought me to the Ribbon Reef.
Okay.
And in 1991, I walk in. I had never even heard of the Ribbon Reef before that because I was downtown boy, Crescent Street, East End, you know. So I walk into the Ribbon Reef. It looked like I went back to 1960, you know, because the Ribbon Reef was open in 1960. This is 1991. And from 1960 to 1991, it was never renovated.
Oof.
So now it was all red and they had music every night. It was like supper dance.
Okay.
I said, wow, this is exciting. You know, very rustic wagon wheel lights. You know, I said, wow. Oh, it was a big change. You know, I was operating a restaurant that had 80 seats, and all of a sudden I came to a restaurant at 250 seats, and, you know, music, waiters, bombays, da-da-da-da, you know, so I was going up, and so I said, okay, so let's, so I sat down, and I said, oh my God, I said, can I afford this place? Anyway, I sat down, and I made a deal. And the reason I made a deal is not because I was smart. It's because, well, I thought I was smart that I made the deal, but then I realized that I made the deal because the restaurant was on a decline. You know, the Carey Strip was always been the best street in the restaurants back from the 50s, but everything was geared from the Blue Bonnets. So at that, in those years, the Blue Bonnets had gone down. Stagecoach was down. The whole strip here was dead.
Okay.
And the owners of the restaurant here were dropping sales from 88 by $300,000 a year because in 1988, maybe you don't remember, there was the white collar recession. So all the businessmen, French Canadians and Jews and everybody that was coming to the restaurant are spending big money. Their business had gone down and they weren't coming to the Ribbon Reef. So the guys now being at my age now, they were 67 on. They said, look, we had a good run. Now we have to renovate. We have to put money. And I don't know when it's going to come back. So let's jump ship now and sell it. So I came in, being a young guy. They said, look, that's the restaurant. It needs a guy like you to work. Anyway, long story short, I bought it.
How did it happen? Like very fast? You just made a bid and then...
Yeah. I said, how much, I asked him, how much you want to sell? He says, well, what do you think it's worth? So I gave him a number and that was it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, we made the deal. I didn't have money to buy the property. So I bought just the business. I had a rent and I was in business. 91 in November. 12 months later, I was $150,000 in the hole. The next year, another $150,000.
So are you making like?
So I went back to the owners. I dropped the keys, and I said,
"I'm done.
I'm done." Wow, relax. So I had let's say at that time I had $120,000 of rent. So I dropped the rent. I dropped the rent to 60. I had a balance of sale that was paying them. I dropped that to a quarter, and I brought consultants to help me. I brought business executives, and everybody was telling me, Peter, there's nothing to do here. The Carey is dead. Why did you ever come here? So 90, 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, I was borrowing from Paul to pay Peter and vice versa. And in a situation like that, when you go to the bank to borrow money, they say, well, you're not making money. Well, I'd like to renovate. You know, you have to. He says, you have no profits, no money. Until the end of 98, I was able to put a package together with a bank. There was a bank manager that I gave him too many martinis, and he agreed to give me a loan. And I borrowed some money from some friends, and I managed to renovate the restaurant in 1999. With a budget of $650,000.
Okay.
Now, $650,000. By the time I opened up, it had gone to $1,000,001 at about $300,000-$400,000 of extras. Because, you know, when you're renovating an old building, and it wasn't even my building I was renovating, you don't know this is not included, that's not included, that's not included. So I'd say, oh yeah, we can't leave it. So I signed. So we open up the restaurant. We have a big opening, but through consultation with some people, they said that I shouldn't drop the music. So I started the new Ribbon Reef with the music, but I changed it around. And after about 2-3 nights, I hear the music and I had customers coming in here. And I just realized that I was listening to too many consultants and to too many friends, and music was dépassé. I had done my research and I had gone to New York. I had gone to Boston. Souper dansant was done. And I hated it because, you know, you have two types of people. You have a person who wants to come in and dance and he wants loud music, and you have one who wants to have a business meeting. And all the people that were there, the customers, I was at that time 38 years old. Everybody was my age, 67, 75, 80. They were all old people, so they liked that. And they were used to that. So I made a decision I opened up and I had music Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Saturday night at 9 o'clock, I get upset and I leave and I drive up to Hudson. Take a cigar and I drive up to Hudson thinking about what I'm going to do. And I came back. Took me an hour. I was back here by 12. I come back. I sit down with the music and I said, this is your last paycheck. As of Monday, the Ribbon Reef opens up with no music. And that's my decision. I said, you know something? I will listen to myself and I'm not going to invite any more business consultants. You know, because I realized, I said, here I am asking a consultant who's gone to university. And I said, my friend, did you ever run a restaurant?
Yeah.
No. Consulting me how to run a restaurant. I said, this is not Tim Hortons. This is not McDonald's. You know, this is a specialty restaurant and it's got to come from inside. So that's what happened. And then I turned it around and there was no music and I changed the menu. I took out. And
so
I
what,
said,
year, what year are we?
We're now at 99. We're at the year 2000.
2000. Okay.
2000. Drop everything, music change, boom, new Ribbon Reef, new menu, boom, steakhouse, like it is now. That's what I did. And I said, this is what it's going to go. And I had people who say, hey, where's the music? I said, there's no music. I said, I don't want to see no 75-year-olds in my restaurant anymore. I want to be able to attract the 30, 35, 40. And these guys don't want the music. You know, it was like music was like 30, 40 years ago where, you know, the woman was home, not working.
Yeah, it was not trendy anymore.
Yeah, the woman was home, was not at home, were home with the kids, not working. The husband would be the big shot. It says, sweetheart, put your high heels on. We're going out Thursday night, dining and dancing. That wasn't today anymore. You know, it's done. And I did that. And this was, let's say we opened up, I remember September, October, November, December. You know, the restaurant was very busy at the time, but because of the music, I didn't have Christmas parties. So I said, did I do the right thing? And I fought. We went over to January, February, and by the end of February, I see the restaurant full one night on a Saturday night. Oh, I said, I think I'm on the same track. So now the restaurant and all these customers that were giving me shit and you're going to close and this and that. Now when they saw the restaurant coming and I said, hey, you have a reservation. I have no place for you.
Oh my God.
And
yeah.
And then they started saying, I says, we always knew you were a smart guy. and then the restaurant started going up, 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 up. And now from 2001, 2002, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, and 20. And it's been climbing every year.
Yeah.
Until March 17 when we closed. And
that's where we're going, right?
3 months and I'm down $2 million of sales.
Je fais une petite parenthèse sur le podcast en cours afin de vous remercier tous et chacun qui nous écoute. Vous êtes des milliers chaque mois à écouter Hypercroissance et ça me touche du fond du cœur. Également, si vous connaissez quelqu'un qui aurait sa place sur le podcast pour nous parler d'hypercroissance, je vous invite à m'écrire personnellement au email suivant agang@j7media.com, donc A-G-A-G-N-E, @7media.com. Et ça me fera un énorme plaisir de discuter avec vous. De retour à l'épisode en cours.
So, crazy time right now, actually, Peter, for a lot of people, especially for restaurants, but for so many businesses, right? Events businesses, you know, people who are in the event industry. It's a chaos right now. And the culture, oh my God, tourism, it's crazy. And, you know, we had a lot of discussions around that, how, you know, the rib will come back, how restaurants owners will come back. I want to hear you on that, okay? I want to hear you on that, how you think the restaurant industry will be in July, August, September of 2020. Because now, slowly but surely, it looks like things are going back to normal. We're recording, like I said, on June 19. Restaurants in Montreal are opening on Monday, so June 22nd.
Yeah, rushing. We're rushing to, that's why, you know, you see here, I have people upstairs.
Yeah.
Rushing to open up on the 22nd. You see, after 3 months, it's like opening up a brand new restaurant. There was nothing in the fridges. There was nothing. We have to start from scratch. Staff has to be retrained.
Yeah.
Manager to be retrained. And not only that, but there's a lot of people that I can't get back because, you know, the government started throwing money to everybody.
Oh, my God.
And now
nobody wants to work.
And now the guys in the kitchen, you know, they're making $500 a week in the middle of summer. They say, and I call him up. He says, oh, I'm sick. My mother, my brother, whatever. I'm afraid the COVID. I can't. I'm scared, you know. So I said, hey, buddy, you have to come back to work. Oh, I'm going to the hospital. I'm afraid the guy, the mask. So I'm having the waiters are coming back because, you know, when you're working in the kitchen and now you're making $500 a week in your pocket and it's July and August, you say, you know, let me just pull it out. You know, I'm making $2,000 a month. You know, well, when they start getting the taxes and they have to pay, it's going to be so. But at the same time, I figure out that there's going to be a number of restaurants that are going to close up that won't be able to hire everybody. So we'll probably be able to get some new employees.
Let's talk about it. You said it. And I think it's going to happen. A lot of restaurants will not reopen. And a lot of restaurants will open, but maybe will not. They will not be able to stay in good shape maybe for the next couple of weeks, next couple of months, because maybe the demand will not be there. Maybe they will not be able to find good employees. How do you react to that? How do you see the market right now?
First of all, there's a few things. Number one, like we said before we started this conversation, the restaurants were having a hard time before. A lot of restaurants were having a hard time before COVID. Now, why? Because restaurants are not charging enough for their food. Instead of competing for service and difference, everybody's competing for price. And everybody's bringing down the price. And at the end of the day, they don't make money. And, you know, according to the statistics, restaurants are making profit in the single digits and low single digits.
Low single digits, yeah.
You can't sustain a business with the profits of 3%, 4%, and 5%. And we're not talking profits like we mentioned, you know, Amazon, where they're making $100 million. We're talking about restaurants that are making $1 million a year. So if you're making $1 million a year sales, 3% is like $30,000. Your air conditioner breaks, it costs you $40,000. So the restaurants in Montreal are $500,000 a year, $600,000 a year, $1 million a year, $1.5 million, you know, the $30,000 a week. You know, the restaurants are not making, you know, people might think $20 million, $10 million. There is not one restaurant in Montreal that makes over $10 million. And if there is maybe one. So the volumes are small.
Yeah.
And in Quebec, there's maybe, I don't know, 25,000 restaurants. There's too many restaurants.
Of course.
There are more restaurants here and per capita than in New York. You know, everybody has a dream to open up a restaurant. They know nothing about anything. They just think they're going to open up a restaurant. All their friends are going to come here. They're going to shake their hands. They're going to kiss the girls. They're going to drink wine and they're going to buy you a drink. They're going to play golf 3 times a week. They're going to hire a chef. They're going to hire a manager and life is beautiful. It's not, my friend. It's not. It's not.
It's a real business.
It's a real business. Not only a real business, but it's a very tough business. It's many hours. You know, the majority, like, you know, it's Monday to Friday, everybody goes home. I have to be here at 9 and I have to be here at 5 to start my second shift because people want to go out from 5 to 11 o'clock. They want to go out Christmas. They want to go out New Year's Eve. They want all these things. But somebody has to pay for it. The customer has to pay for it. You know, I hear sometimes with, you know, food critics, and I had a run-in with one food critic in Montreal. She said, I went to this restaurant and I bought a bottle of wine that I know they buy it for $10 at the SAQ and they were selling it for $30. Well, of course, how is the restaurant going to make money? You want the bottle of wine that I buy for $10 and give it to you for $14 because it's not costing me? Of course it's costing me money. There has to be a fridge to put that wine in. I need glasses. I need a nice bucket. I need a waiter to serve it. I need inventory. If you're going to make money, you have to respect certain rules. The food and the payroll should not exceed 60%. You have to have a 40% gross profit. And the restaurant that doesn't have 40% gross profit or close to that is not going to make it. It's not the landlord fault because he's charging you $20,000 or $30,000 a month. He's charging you $30,000 a month because that building that you're in is worth $5 million. It's not because he wants to steal from you. So when you decide to open up a business or a restaurant and you know that that place that you're going has a $30,000 a month rent, right away, you know that the rent should not surpass 7 or 8% of my sales. So then you have to do the reverse. Will I be able to make $400,000 in that location? $400,000 in that location. How much is my average ticket going to be? Let's say $50. Will I be able to serve the 2,000 people? 2,000 people divided by 7, 300. Will I be able to serve 300 people spending $50? People say, well, then they can't. Right. The rent is too expensive. You shouldn't have been there. Or you calculated wrong. And this is the problem that a lot of restaurants have, and they have to wake up, they have to charge, and people need to make more money. They need to make more money. The salaries of the employees have to make more money. You know, it's...
Because at the rib here, and how you position the restaurant is, instead of competing on price, you just increase the value, right? You just improve the experience, increase the value.
The Rib and Reef, it's not a restaurant that's chef-based. I don't need a big chef here. I need a good product, which is a good steak, well-aged, well-cooked, and served. So I start with an expensive product, $25, $30. So I have to put the markup. You see, when it's a chef-oriented restaurant, the guy takes cheap pieces of beef, he marinates it, he puts a sauce, let's say, and he makes a beef bourguignon, or he makes some fancy other food where there's 3 ounces of meat, 5 ounces of water, some artichokes, and he sells it for $22 or $28. He doesn't put that his labor and all that, he doesn't make money out of it. So my restaurant, and this is one thing that I always had, I never liked a restaurant to be controlled by the chef. You know, you have a restaurant controlled by the chef, I can guarantee you, I don't care who you are, if the chef controls your restaurant, you're going to be closer to bankruptcy than you think, and very fast.
Because decisions are not backed with business logic, right? They're backed with maybe arts, artistic. Yes.
And the better chef he is, the more dangerous it is.
Yeah.
Because that's what his job is, to create a beautiful plate. And, you know, he doesn't care how much it costs. He's like an artist making a painting.
So, Peter, during COVID, you did a quick survey with your clientele, asking them how they see themselves coming back at the restaurant. 24% of them said they think it will be safer to use takeout instead of coming at the rib to eat a good steak, okay? A lot of restaurants during the past 3 months, they use different delivery services, they use takeout, they build their own website to sell their services in a different way. All these different things, and also looking at the stats from the survey, how do you see and where do you think the future of restaurants will be? Okay, do you think that people will continue to come at restaurants like they were doing before? Do you think delivery will become more important? How do you see things in the next couple of months, next couple of years?
It's a difficult question, and I can't really know the future. My opinion is pizza, barbecue, like St. Hubert barbecue or Ben, Chinese hot dogs. Those things, I think people will still order out. Instead of going for a pizza, he says, you know something, it's safer, let's stay home and have pizza. But when you're going to the Ribbon Reef, or you want to go dine, yes, you want a good steak. And yes, you can buy a steak as good, or you can come here and buy a steak and broil it at home. But that's not the reason people are coming here. They're coming here to be, they dress casual. They come here to be served. They come here to have an experience of being served, of having a steak. They don't want to broil it. They don't want to wash dishes. So if they don't want to wash dishes, they don't want, why? They want to go somewhere special. So I think for the Ribbon Reef and a few restaurants like the Ribbon Reef, these places will pick up again. Now, pick up again, will it be a month, 2 months, 3 weeks? I don't know. I hope the faster, the better.
Let's speak of that right away. What about the demand? Like, did you, and maybe if you can give us feedback or answers around that, but since, you know, government said that restaurants can be reopened on June 22nd, how the demand has been for the Ribbon Reef? Did you get a lot of calls, reservations, people writing you?
My phone hasn't stopped.
Oh, really?
My phone hasn't stopped. And I've been pleasantly surprised. And my customers calling me, hey, we're happy you're open. Is this open? Is that open? Were you having people on the terrace? And I said, everything is going to be open. And just to give you, you know, like on a usual, let's say, Monday, we serve for supper 100 people. I have almost 80 reservations for Monday so far, and we're not, it's just Friday. So I have 50 reservations for Tuesday. I've got about 60 for Wednesday. I've got 60 for Thursday. I've got 70 for Friday, 80 or 90 for next Saturday. So this first week, it's not only booked, you know, we have more. But if this is how it's going to go, I think that we're going to be back into business by, you know, like my regular business, probably by the end of July or August.
Because people will want to go out right now. They've been stuck in their house. They've been stuck in their place for so many months. They need a break. They need something different, I guess.
Yes.
So a restaurant like yours that offers this kind of experience, I think maybe it will be a bit more easier for you than maybe another place that it's not necessarily the big experience. It's just a normal place. What's your opinion on that?
Exactly. Talking about safety, if it's not the big experience, you say, you know, why take the chance of going and having a pizza? We can just bring it here. But to bring a steak home, number one, it's expensive. And number two, it's not something that carries well. You know, your rare steak, by the time I put it in a plate, take it home, it's not going to be the same way where you have it here. So why would you want to have my steak at home paying $75? It's not, you know, when you pay something for $20, you warm it up, you know, but my food is not to be warmed up. It's not the same thing. And I think also the restaurants that are going to have a hard time because of the you know, the regulations, we had to, you know, they didn't say anything about 50% capacity or...
No, they didn't mention it.
What they did is they said that you have to have a meter and a half or 2 meters away per table. So when you had a restaurant before that had 40 capacity, very tight, it's not going to be too many people in there.
Yeah, that will be our time.
And then when you go out to a restaurant, how would you like to come to the restaurant when you're one or two tables? You know, usually when we go out and we don't see people, you say, doesn't work this restaurant, nobody wants to be here.
Exactly. Let's stay home, right?
Yeah, let's stay home. Because, you know, you don't want to come here and be a one table in the dining room or two. You know, you want to have people. So I think the size of my restaurant, I have high ceilings, I have big tables. Plus now I've spaced it out even more than before. I've taken out maybe half of my tables. So give example, one side of my restaurant, the side of the bar, from 90 people, I put it down to 40 or 45. So there's a lot of space around the tables. And I've got one room, I've got the second room, So plus I have the wine cellar where we're having this meeting now. This table, by law now, you can have 10 people, private. I have the rooftop terrace. I have my cigar lounge. So there's plenty of rooms where, and I've spaced it out to do two sittings, like I'm pushing now on an open table reservation. We have a sitting at 6, 6:30, and then 8:30. So this way we control the amount of people. So if I can, even if I have 50 people at 6:30, another 50 people at 8:30, and I do 100 people,
you'll be okay.
I'll be okay.
Interesting. And have you heard maybe of your friends in the restaurant industry the same thing? Is it something that, you know, they get a lot of demand right now, or?
There's a lot of restaurants. You see, first of all, the rib and reef, I'm not going after serving 200, 300 people a night.
Exactly.
So I have less customers. They take more time. They spend more money. It's a different experience. But when you have other restaurants, family restaurants, because the Rib and Reef is not a family restaurant. This is a corporate restaurant. It's a, you know, you have to make money to come here. You know, like, you know, steakhouses, you know, you laugh, Antoine, but it's true.
Yeah, it's true,
you know,
yeah.
If you don't know the Rib and Reef, it's because you're not financially ready to know the Rib and Reef. Exactly. When you're going to start making a few $100,000 a year,
we're going to see you more often. Yeah.
You know, you can't come to the Rib and Reef when you're making $45,000 or $50,000.
Exactly.
It doesn't, you know. Look, you come sometimes, the cars are, million-dollar cars here. So it's a different story. And this goes back to 100 years ago, because when you would make a good deal, when you make a big splash, you made money, you want to celebrate. What are you going to celebrate with? Sushi? You want a big steak, a big bottle of wine. And if you're in that, a nice cigar after that celebration. You know, you say, look, it's I'm getting married. You go buy your filet sole dinner. So that's why the restaurant, and that's why sometimes a kid, and I said, look, you know, you want to come to the Rib and Reef, go big or stay home. You come for the steak, you take your French fries, or you take your baked potato, you put your sour cream in, you're going to have your shrimp cocktail or your Caesar salad. You're going to finish up with a nice crepe Suzette, nice bottle of wine, a nice grappa, and go up to the cigar lounge, have a nice cigar, and then the night is yours.
Exactly. So it's interesting, because I think, and that's one of the questions I was asking myself, how the demand will be. And I really thought that the demand will be high for restaurants, because if you just go out right now and you walk outside and then you see a place open, there is a line in front, because that's the only place that's open, right? And people are craving to just go out and eat something else than something they cooked. So I'm under the impression that good restaurants that have good foundation, a good branding, a good services will be in good shape. And especially, and that's interesting also, that this kind of COVID thing happened now, right? Because if it was in the winter, January at minus 30, not sure the demand will be as high as right now. People want to be outside. They want to be on a terrace having a good bottle of wine, like you mentioned. I think it's helping a little bit, right?
No, you're right. You're right. But at the same time, the Rib and Reef, my best months are October till March, because then people go out more, you know, steak, they go on vacation, the barbecue season, they play golf, you know, so they're, that's why our quiet months here are July and August. Those are the two. We're still very busy, but if you want to compare, those are the two quietest months. But I'm I took these 3 months, and it's not like I was staying home. I was here every day, like I told you, because I took the opportunity to do some renovations that were needed in my kitchen, and I had to rip out the floor. And to rip out the floor, I needed to take out the equipment. So it was a big work. And you know, we started hearing COVID the beginning of March, but I didn't notice no business, no delay. I mean, no drop of business until we closed on
March 15, roughly?
March 15 or 16.
Yeah, something like that.
Up to Sunday, the 13th, my business was regular.
Yeah.
And then we noticed a little drop on Monday. And then by Monday afternoon, we said, everybody closed on Tuesday. So at that point, I found that, I said, oh, this is my opportunity to rip off the kitchen. So I called in a general contract, brought in the to work, and they stopped after 2 days, so I was stuck. So we had to rush at the end to put the restaurant together. But I have I've got a good team of people, you know, with Abdu and Patrick and my chef Danny and Jeff. They started working a couple of weeks prior to this, and they're still now cleaning, and we're going to be ready for Monday morning. I changed the ventilation. We grilled some steaks the other day to test. Everything is working fine, and we'll be ready Monday morning. We're firing up the grills, and we're going to have a busy rest of the summer. I'm sure, and I hope that all my colleagues and all the restaurant guys in Montreal make it, because they're all hardworking people. If I can leave with one advice to the people, guys in the restaurant business, raise your prices. Let people are very happy to pay, but you have to not be embarrassed to charge your services, so you guys can all, including myself, can make a decent profit. We're not here to rip anybody off, and nobody's doing it. But at the same time, you guys should all be paid what you deserve for the hard work that we all put in.
Yeah, of course. So I'm going to see you in a couple of days, Peter, because I think it's time to encourage all the restaurants that are reopening, right? Yeah, it's time, right? A good steak in the summer, nothing's better than that. Peter Katsoudas, thank you very much for your time today. I think it was fascinating to hear your story that I didn't know. All the different restaurants that you had before. I think it was really, really interesting. Anything else that crossed your mind before I let you go that maybe can benefit the audience, people who are in the restaurant industry? Anything that crossed your mind?
No, we said everything. It's just that sometimes when I hear, the people in the media say restaurant people are passionate people, they do it for the love. Yes, that's true. But at the same time, we need to make money, and everything is expensive. So if customers, sometimes people will say, well, if you put too expensive, customers are not going to come out. Well, let them not come out. Let them stay home. If you can't afford to pay the proper prices, don't go out. Stay home and cook. Now, when the time comes, you're going to have to go out. You're going to have to pay. And the restaurants, this is one thing, maybe a little change. The restaurants are not for everybody all the time. The restaurants, I remember, my father, my mother, they used to go out on special occasion. My father wasn't a businessman, was an employee. They used to go out on special occasions. So maybe restaurants have to be for people special occasions and appreciate it more. And, if you have something too often, or too much, you don't appreciate it. So they have to appreciate. They have to respect it and go out more often. And it's a good thing that staying home with your family and spending more time would be good for everybody, like they're doing now. And that's going to end up helping a lot of families. And I hope it helped me. I said before, since I was 20 years old in the restaurant business, this is the first time in my life that I've eaten home 7 days a week. I have Antoine. 47 years, I have never eaten at home 7 days a week that I did 3 months. And I love it. And that's why I told you, I said, maybe it's time for me to think of slowly retiring.
Yeah. No, you did a good run so far, Peter. So,
and I got good staff here. So yeah. Maybe I'll take more time off and let my guys handle the shop.
That's perfect. Peter Katsoudas, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And hope to see you soon at the Rib. En plus d'un restaurateur connaissant beaucoup de succès, Peter est également un conteur d'histoires extraordinaire. Niveau business maintenant, j'ai trouvé intéressant le fait qu'il mentionne que les restaurateurs doivent absolument augmenter leurs prix s'ils veulent rester en affaires. Trop de restaurants finissent avec une marge bénéficiaire beaucoup trop basse qui leur empêche d'avoir une flexibilité quand les temps durs comme le COVID frappent aux portes. Selon Peter, un restaurant en santé doit opérer à 40% de marge brute. Également, si vous connaissez quelqu'un qui aurait sa place sur le podcast pour nous parler d'hypercroissance, je vous invite à m'écrire personnellement au email suivant agang@j7media.com. Donc, A-G-A-G-N-E, à commercial, J, le chiffre 7, média au singulier.com. Et ça me fera un énorme plaisir de discuter avec vous.
Je termine en vous invitant à nous donner une note de 5 étoiles sur iTunes ou sur votre plateforme de podcast préférée. Vos commentaires sont également très appréciés. Sur ce, on se dit à bientôt pour un prochain épisode de Hypercroissance.